Welcome to episode 141 of the Geocaching Podcast, January Cacher Coffee, recorded live from CacherCon 2010, February 6th, 2010. I'm your host, XFunkX, with
Daryl W4.
If you want to participate in our show today, please call 724-444-7444, and our Talkcast ID is 7525. You can also join our live chat room to participate with our other listeners, and that can be found at geocachingpodcast.com/live. We have a voicemail line, 206-350-3GPS, and we're on Twitter at twitter.com/GCPodcast. Well, guys, welcome to CacherCon 2010. Like I said, XFunkX, and we got on our phone another host with us is Montu Ryder. Montu, how have you been since last week?
Doing pretty good. Right now, I'm out with the trains. We've got a couple of birthday trains running today, and it's also our open ride day. So I'm actually doing two jobs at once today and having fun doing it.
Well, that's good to hear. We're actually here. We're set up and rolling. Happy to finally get everything going, despite having some issues with the TalkShoe chat client. So unfortunately, the folks in our live audience aren't going to be able to see what you guys on the TalkShoe client are doing. But we're really looking forward to wrapping this up, actually, getting home and taking a nap, because I got up this morning about 3 o'clock, couldn't sleep, just so excited about the event. Now that we're here and set up, it's like, okay, I think I want to go home and get some sleep.
Yeah. Definitely. And for me, it's been quite a week. We've just been preparing for this, running pocket queries, getting all my sessions ready. I'm doing GSAC later. So it should be a good time. This is our second live, actually, in front of an audience event, and this is a little bit bigger than last time.
Just a little bit, and we are expecting a lot more people later in the day. I'd probably say right now we have about 60 people or so, mm-hmm. and you know, we probably have some people enjoying the beverages and whatnot next door, so a lot of fun there.
Definitely. Well, you know what? We couldn't have the bad cop with us, but we do have a geocaching question of the day. If you guys aren't familiar with that, the bad cop on Twitter asks every day a question and summarizes it on his website. So let's hear that.
Geocaching question of the day. Bad cop asks, you answer.
Hello, this is the Bad Cop, and welcome to the geocaching question of the day. Each weekday, I ask a geocaching-related question to my Twitter audience, and then summarize the replies and post it on my website. I hope this little project will keep you up to date on the ever-changing face of geocaching. I've asked the question, have you driven 100 miles or more for an event cache? And you've responded, just about 60% of you have driven the 100 miles or more. The winner, 950 miles one way to an event. Now that is commitment. So tell me, have you driven 100 miles or more to an event cache? Oh, say like CacherCon? Hey guys, have fun at CacherCon today. You want to find out all this and more? Follow me, the Bad Cop, on Twitter.
First item on our agenda today to talk about is actually a new website called tb-rescue.com. And we have Sasha, the creator of tbrescue.com, on the phone with us. Welcome to the call.
Hi, good morning, everybody.
Well, we're glad to have you with us today. But for everyone who hasn't yet heard about the site, could you give us kind of an overview of what this website does?
Yeah, sure. So TB Rescue is a small private hobby kind of project. And a few geocachers in Germany had some nice ideas. Especially one guy called Skibalba01 and some people from a German geocaching podcast. And the idea was, well, it so often happens that a travel bug or geocoin or another trackable gets stuck in a geocache somewhere abroad, somewhere far away from where you live. Wouldn't it be cool if there was a website where you could say, well, I want to have my TB rescued. So can anybody go to that cache and rescue my TB from the cache so that it's been passed on, that it moves on? And that's basically what the website is about.
Very cool. Now, for many of us, we're used to stuff coming out of the U.S. and North America in general, but this is actually coming out of Germany.
Well, sorry for that. Yeah, I'm from Germany. You can probably hear that. I'm from Hamburg, North Germany, and however, currently I'm on a business trip in New York City. So I'm calling from a hotel room in New York City. And we started in German language, and I wanted to see how successful that would be. And it became pretty successful. So we got more than 1,000 users in the first two weeks. And so we decided to translate the whole site to English. So we tried. You might find some errors and mistakes and spelling typos and so on. But I hope it's fun for you.
Yeah. Now, can you go ahead and tell us a quick overview of how you would go ahead and either help a travel bugger along, or say you wanted one rescued? How would I go ahead and do that?
All right. So let's take the first example. If you have a TB that is stuck somewhere in the geocache, you just have to go to the website, register yourself, so create a user there. It's very important that you choose the same nickname that you use on geocaching.com. We need that to assign your account, and so that we list your TBs correctly and so on. You simply enter your TB travel bug item on the site, and what will happen then is we will get the information from geocaching.com. We will get the GPS coordinates, and in the first step, your TB will appear on a global map where other rescue teams can look at and see where TBs need help. That's one thing. And the second thing, which is pretty cool, I think, is people who register themselves on the site, they can also apply to watch a certain area, to watch a territory. So that means if somebody has a TB to rescue, we will inform the watchers of that area that there's a trackable that needs help. And if you have a TB that is stuck in Germany, you can look that up on the map. Almost 100% is covered. So in Germany, there are more than 800 geocaches watching all areas of Germany. Wherever a TB needs help, there will probably be somebody who will help. And what we saw is in the U.S., it has spread to the U.S., and we have more than a few hundred watchers already in the U.S. So there's a map, and there you can see what is covered in the world so far. There's even the Oman, Alaska, and Australia.
Very cool.
So that is one part. And if you want to help a travel bug that is stuck in a geocache, it's simply the other way around. You also should register. Then you can watch an array, or you can simply go to the map and see if there's a trackable item close to your current position that needs help.
Very cool. And I understand that even Jeremy has been kind of pushing this. Jeremy Irish of Groundspeak.
Yeah, I mean, we have another geocaching platform that is called tbrun.com, and it's about travel bug races, and that has been online already for a year now. And to set that up, we have been in contact with Jeremy and Brian, so with the guys from geocaching, to get their official blessing, to get some data from them and all that stuff. And yeah, I was very excited that even Jeremy posted something on his Twitter account last week. So. And that pushed the site tremendously. You can.
Well, Sasha, we want to thank you for coming on to the show today and giving us a little bit of an overview of that. And again, that's tb-rescue.com. Thanks for joining us today.
That is right. Appreciate it. Have fun, guys, over there. Bye-bye.
Not a problem. Bye. All right. This is a live cash or coffee edition, so please raise your hand if you're in the room here with us and you want to put in any input. We'll get some microphones over to you. Normally, if you're on the phone with us, you can hit the *8 on your keypad, and that will get you into the queue to join us here. Daryl, our last live cash or coffee, we had some discussion about a reverse geocache puzzle, and now there's this other one.
Yeah, you know... I think there's something to this. Every time we're going to do one of these live shows, someone's going to do something really cool with this technology. And you know, the first one was that reverse geocache puzzle. This one's called the Frostromatic box. Am I seeing that right?
I would say, yeah. I mean, that sounds good to me.
Yeah, it's really just another of the same, little bit more interesting build from what I've seen. And he really does go through a lot of the build instructions on the website. Doesn't want to go into a lot of detail, unlike the previous guy did, because his wife has yet to complete it, according to the last update on Thursday.
And basically, if you guys aren't familiar with what this is, it's like a box that it's locked, and the box actually has to go to some GPS coordinates in order for it to be open. And there's a limited amount of time that it can times that you can push it and get some information off of it. It's definitely a cool, idea, I think.
It really is. And both of these implementations have been giving it to someone that the creator actually, you know, really has some kind of emotional attachment. The first one's for a wedding gift. This one was his wife's Christmas gift. And for those of you in the audience live, you know, you can look on the screen right now. This is the build, and it has over to the left side the LCD that tells you how many tries you have left, how far you are, and you just kind of, through process of elimination, you know, draw your circles on your map to try to figure out where the key is. And over at the right side, that's actually the GPS. So,
and the cool thing about this is this box can be built with easy hardware that you can get and program. It's fairly easy. I looked at the programming code, and I'm not much of a programmer, but I think I could do it. It seemed like a cool thing, and it's fairly cheap to build too. So we'll link to that on our website, so you can see the link. That's our website is geocachingpodcast.com, and
And there's a little bit of carpentry work involved, though. I'm sure you could probably find something if you really wanted to avoid some of that. But he goes through in this one with illustrations of how to prepare the drawer and everything. And the first one actually just opened up. This one's just unlocking a drawer. So really cool. I still want to see someone do something with this, though, in a geocache that, you know, we can go out and find.
Yeah, that would be cool. If anyone in our audience is great at building things, we'd love to see this.
Yeah. So, you know, there's a, hey, you know, Glenn, Rat Track over there, you know, maybe some ideas for you. Take some little hacking instructions off this site, maybe.
Now, the other thing that I happen to have, I'm going to bring up here, and it goes into a little bit of a cache that I tried to find the other day. It's a multi-cache, and I found the actual location where the final container is actually at. However, I couldn't actually find the cache because it was under snow. I DNF'd it because I could not find it. Now, the person before me who said that they did find it logged it, and they said basically that they couldn't sign the log because it was frozen underground. They can provide ground zero if needed. Thanks for putting this cache together. The thing that I thought was interesting is the guy had been a member since June 04, and he's had 1,688, or it was June 4th, 2009, I'm sorry. He had 1,688 finds, and I'm guessing that he didn't find half of those. As the cache owner, I don't know, Daryl, what do you think?
You know, I really don't know what I'd do about it, but it definitely seems like something's a little fishy. You know, it could be that he's actually gotten that much into caching. You know, we've seen some of that around here where people really get into it. Well, yeah, and we'd certainly like anyone in our audience to kind of pipe up and let us know what they think, too.
Well, and I think that it all depends on the location, too, because for us, where I'm located in northern Indiana, and we don't have near the density that you guys here have in the Detroit area. So for him to find that many caches, it'd be pretty tough. The thing is, if I were the cache owner, because the thing about this is I know that the cache isn't there because the person after me DNF'd it, and then the cache owner went out and said, no, it's not there. So I don't know. Anyone want to put any input in? What do you guys think? Is it ethical for the guy to log it? I mean, it goes into that question of, is it ethical? But
yeah, it's that whole ethical caching thing again. And you know, really, unless you get permission from the cache owner and you haven't signed the log, then in my book, there's no reason to, you know, log it. You know, maybe if you haven't heard anything, but, you know, it's just really one of those things. If you don't contact the log owner and get permission, then you've got to, you know, delete the log.
Yeah. We have people in our audience here that want to talk. So go ahead. Welcome to the podcast.
Hey guys. I'm Head Hard Hat. I'm a long time lister, first time caller. And, actually, I truly believe I have about 108 hides myself. Normally, in a case like this, I really truly believe if you can't find and sign the log, it shouldn't count. Now, if this is a 1515, may not be as big of a deal, but if it's something higher in difficulty in that, you absolutely want the log signed for that. It boils down to your own ethics. You're cheating yourself. Really, if you log it as a find and you don't, or if you don't sign the logbook itself, but this is an activity that you're tracking yourself, and if your conscience allows it, you're obviously gonna go that way. I guess when it comes to the owner of a cache itself, It's up to the individual owner if they want to delete it or not.
Well, and as you can see, we've got the live cache page up here now. The owner did not delete it. And I've talked to the owner before. He's a real good guy. I don't know. If I were the cache owner, I've not come to that yet in my caching experience where I've had to contemplate deleting someone's log. And I don't know what I feel.
Well, and one of the things with this is it's a puzzle cache. It's not just a traditional cache, which does make a little bit of a difference because they've gone through the work. They've solved the puzzle. As long as their cords are right, you know, as a cache owner, there's an argument. They did the work. They went out there. It's missing. You know, find, you know, claim the find. But you have to really contact the cache owner and find out for sure that they're, you know, in, that they're cool with that before you do it and get, you know, get their blessing.
Definitely. And we have another person in the live audience here. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, team typo is, we logged one Easter, I guess 2 years ago this coming Easter. This was outside of Traverse City, and it was about a half-mile hike through what would normally be a swamp, except there was these big pillowy, reedy areas that we had to jump across to keep from getting up knee-deep in it. It was cold out there, and the thing is buried at the base of a big tree in the middle of this thing. And we got out there, and it was frozen in a block of ice about as big as your desk. It was an ammo can. We could see it. We could even touch the lid. And if we'd have had a torch, we could have gotten it out of there. But it's Linda and my dad and I in the middle of this, and we were freezing our buns off. So what I did is I took my pocket knife out, and I made a couple of X's on the lid of the ammo box. And we hiked back out of there, and from a distance, I took a picture of the two of them just wading through all of this stuff. And I wrote to the cache owner and says, hey, we were out there. I says, we saw the box. We had it on our hands. I put X's on the lid, but there is no way until June that that's coming out of there. And I sent him a picture and indicated what tree. So he let it stand. And only one person has logged it since then in the last 2 years, and it had been about 8 months before us since anybody logged it. But far as I know, it's still out there, and it still has X's on the lid of the ammo can.
Well, I think the difference between that and this cache that we're talking about here is the owner went out and said, no, the cache isn't there. And it wasn't there when the guy found it, because the snow hadn't melted. And so there's no possible way he could have even found the cache. I mean, I know where the cache is, too, but I wasn't going to log it as a found. So...
Well, yeah, and again, it's something that you just really have to talk with the cache owner. And as a cache owner, it's a puzzle cache. They did the work. You know, in your case, it was something that, you know, you're obviously there. You can prove that you were there and just couldn't get the container out. That's a good find, you know?
Now, speaking of...
Oh, we have one more.
Sorry, go ahead.
Jim from Cache Chaos. I've got about 50 caches out, and we just came back up from Florida, and we stopped at the rest stop in Monroe. And somebody else had logged in, and it was a block of ice like an ammo container. We went out there, and we found it, and it was scattered all over the ground and sort of put it back together. What do you do when the logs are so frozen you can't sign the things, and people have logged in before us that said the cache is a block of ice, you can't sign the log, or the log is wet, and the owner hasn't gone out to try and repair the cache? And I know I try to keep mine up as much as I can. I've got one that I've got to check on the way home tonight that keeps disappearing on me, and I can't figure that one out. So what, you know, you log it in as a found, but you can't really sign the log because it's so wet, it's just shreds of paper.
I would say, at least in my situation, I would say if you can find the container, even if you can't sign the log, I would be willing to sign it. I mean, I suppose that's all ethics as far as...
Well, you have the log in your hand. It's like signing a wet log, you know. It might, yeah. You know, you can sign the wet log, and it's not going to necessarily stick. You know, no matter what you use on a wet log, you know, it's kind of questionable. Yeah, Sharpies will bleed, and, you know, who knows what it is. So in my book, yeah, I would sign it, I would log it, and I'd also post the needs maintenance log to it again.
Yeah, we've done that a lot of times. Yeah. A lot of caches.
Yeah, but, you know, That's not a question to me. That's something that I would log. You know, even if I couldn't sign the book, you know, I had it in my hand. I attempted to sign it, and I would log it and, you know, let the cache owner know it needs some attention.
Now, that also brings us to our next topic, and I don't know if you saw it this last week, but there was a cache placed listed on the International Space Station.
Yeah, now this was actually not... This was placed back in October, I believe it was, of 2008. So it's been a while.
But it first got listed this last week.
Right, it was published this last week by Jeremy. He did it personally. And it stirred up a lot of controversy. And, you know, I'm sure we're going to get some heated debate on this one. But let's give you guys some background first. It was placed by an English-American video game developer and entrepreneur, Richard Garriott, I believe it's pronounced. And he was actually up at the ISS as one of the space tourists. And it goes by the name of Lord British, if anyone wants to look him up on geocaching.com or on Ultima Online. But it was just published by Eisenreich because it took him that long.
Not Eisenreich. Jeremy.
Yeah, you know, okay, fine. Sorry. But yeah, he's got his own reviewer account, and rather than do it under anyone else's account, because this has gone, what, a year and a half now, I guess,
yeah,
where they're trying to determine if this is something that should be published or not, and they finally said, yeah, you know, let's publish it. So that's really what we're going to talk about. But another cool factor on the Lord British is that his father was Owen Garriott, a former NASA astronaut who flew with Skylab 3, the space shuttle STS-9. So there's some history there, and that's pretty cool just having that.
Well, and I think part of the reason it stirred up a lot of feedback and comments, at least online this last week, was the fact that the space station isn't like a... It moves.
Yeah, it's not on terra firma.
Yeah, and so they're saying that, you know, it breaks GroundSpeak's rules itself because it's moving. And there was a lot of debate and a lot of heated words actually logging. And there were people that logged the cache as found. I'm guessing as they thought it was a joke. But Jeremy even tweeted it from his Twitter account. And at first, I know I had said it on Twitter, and you may have even commented on it too. I thought maybe Jeremy's account had gotten hacked, because it seemed kind of a far publish, because I know how strict they are in their rules, so it seemed like a far publish.
Now, of course, anyone wants to weigh in at any point, you know, raise your hand, hit star 8 on the talk shoe, and we have one right now, actually.
Hi, Daryl. I'm Roger from Southline Trekkers, and I was just curious if you got permission from the landowner.
Well, and there's been some contention there, because I guess technically no one... It really owns it. It's the International Space Station. Certain parts are owned by certain people. So, you know, there's been a lot of debate just over that point. Now, this is in Locker 218, which I assume is on the Russian side, because the Russians are allowing the space tourists and not the U.S. So I assume he got permission. You know, if nothing else, they would have cleared out the locker by now.
Yeah, and the interesting thing, too, is that right after everyone started flaming the logs, it was actually locked, so you couldn't publish any more logs, along with this guy's other cache. He placed one other cache, only found, I think, one cache. So another thing, it seemed weird to me when I looked at it, because the guy had only found one cache, placed two, and his other one is, like, way below the ocean. And so to me, it was just a little bit strange. But Jeremy actually, in his blog on February 4th, came out and said, you know, there are guidelines. There's something that we can follow, we can choose not to follow. And we decided to publish this one because it's totally freaking cool. And, you know, so there, he also says that people that quoted the guidelines on moving caches, they totally disagree, because for one thing, if they stood by that 100%, we couldn't publish anything because the Earth moves itself.
Yeah, well, the big thing about the moving caches is simply that you go out looking for a moving cache, if someone just grabbed it, it's not going to be there. And I understand that, you know, especially because most of those were listed as traditional caches anyway.
Yeah.
So, you know, I always had an issue with the moving cache thing, because it's not a moving cache. It's always going to be in the same location. It's just the object is moving. And that's a little bit different. The problem that I had with it was that it's not something that can be found by a significant number of cachers.
No, but then, that goes into the same things. I mean, there are a lot of puzzle caches that are really hard that you can't find by a significant amount of people. I mean, you have to do a lot of work, or even scuba diving. I mean, you have to take a specific class. You have to be certified. You know, you have to do a lot of things there.
But that doesn't cost you millions of dollars to do.
True, but it's all up to you. I mean, it's a cache. It's up to you if you want to find it.
We
do have another comment here in the audience, so welcome.
This is Ben Harris. I'm Team Yodi Podi, Farmington Hills. The real question is, how can you claim it's a geocache?
True.
That's a good point. Now, I think for my part, I'd have to say it is in geosynchronous orbit. No, it's not. It's not because it moves. So yeah, you know, that's a good point. If it was in geosynchronous orbit, I could see it, but not so much.
Yeah.
Although, you know, they are going now into the realm of if you want to place one on a Mars station or on a moon station, they have no problem with it, according to the blog post. So
yeah, in fact, you said that new draft for the guidelines say geocaches in space or other planets / spacecraft, we do allow cache placement in outer space, such as the International Space Station or Mars. Make sure you can land and connect the space station / planet if acceptable as a listing. Keep in mind, however, that due to the 520-foot guideline, you can't place another cache on the ISS because there's already one placed there. So sorry, guys, if you want to go place another cache on the ISS, you can do it.
Now, it still goes back to that thing, though, about being able to do it. And they just changed that, what was it, in April last year, and raised a stink over a lot of these caches that couldn't be found by a significant number of people.
Like the challenge caches and things
right.
like that.
Right, so that's really my only thing. Other than that, I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think it's cool. I mean, yeah, I probably won't ever find it because I won't be able to get up there, but, I mean, there are people, and like the guy that placed it said, there has to be other astronauts that are cachers, so he thought it'd be a cool idea.
Yeah, yeah, I don't have a problem with the cache really being there, except I don't want that thing to show up in my pocket queries. And according to Jeremy, they're actually going to be sitting there updating the coordinates every so often. So what happens when it just happens to show up in someone's pocket query? I hope that they figured out a way to lock that out.
Now, if there's any other questions here, go ahead and raise your hand if you want to put in any input on the ISS or anything else that we've talked about today. Or if you're on the phone call with us, give us a call and push the *8 on your keypad.
Now, Montu, are you actually still with us? Oh, I think we've lost Montu.
We might have.
Oh, well. So we're down to two hosts, the only two that are in the room. You know, it's kind of hard for us to leave, so.
But, you know, for the ISS, I mean, I'm glad that, and I don't know, I know Jeremy and the rest of the reviewers have a really tough job to publish the caches, and I commend them for doing something cool like this, even though it did take a lot of heat, and, you know, ultimately it is their decision what to publish and what not to publish. I mean, a lot of people have issues with the way that they do things, but it's their decision.
Well, and one of the problems that we all have run into with the guidelines is they are guidelines. They're not rules. So at a whim, they can change them, and, you know, that's fine. It's their rules that they're not rules. So if they want to break it, that's fine. You know, I just kind of wonder, you know, is this cache on a space station really going to do raise our visibility as cachers? You know, we've seen a lot of that happening. Yeah, we had a couple of bad stories more recently, but yeah, we've seen more and more news, more and more expressions in the media, and actually, you know, for those of us here, Head Hard Hat's going to be talking about that in his presentation. He's got some kind of exciting announcement, which I think is going to be related, but you know, we'll have to see when he actually makes the announcement. But yeah, I'm curious what you guys think too. Of, you know, is this going to raise publicity and interest, and hopefully get some more cashers?
Again, we have another person here in the audience that wants to put in some input. So welcome to our podcast.
I'm Vontae from Ferndale. Just going back to the ethics question, I would say that if I ever do make it up to Ground Zero on the ISS and the cache is not there, I am definitely going to log that one.
Oh, yeah. And you know, I think I would definitely say that, too. It's definitely okay. If you're making it somewhere like that, you're making a trip out to it, it's definitely okay.
Yeah, you know, I wonder what the price tag is for the ticket there. You know, if you're going to spend that much time and money to do it, you better be getting that fine.
But now, as long as you can prove that you were there.
Well, I don't think there's going to be any problem with that because, you know, the news always covers the guys who climb into that capsule.
True. Anyone else have any comments here?
And if anyone has anything after the show, we have a voicemail number. They can call in their comments there.
206-3503-GPS is our voicemail.
And we're certainly open to other topics of conversation right now. Does anyone have anything that they want to talk about? We've got a few minutes before we have to clear the stage. And I hear crickets.
But, hey, that's okay. It's
Ben Harris, Team Yodi Podi again. How are we going to handle GLONASS and all the new GPS systems?
Good point. You know, I don't know what we're really going to do, but as far as I know, they're all going to be reporting fairly close to each other. So it really is just going to be a matter of which GPS you're using whichever satellites. Hopefully some of these are going to be a little bit more accurate. Like what's I'm trying to remember what the European one is. Does anyone remember the name of the European one? I keep trying to call it Magellan, but I know that's the wrong system. But these are all basically alternative systems because people don't want to rely on the U.S. for their GPS, because at any point, whoever is in charge, in this case Obama, could say, no one's using the GPS, we're going to shut it all down. So, and we've got some serious questions about the viability of the satellite system. Air Force says, no, we're going to make sure it's staying alive, but the GAO, Government Accountability Office, has raised questions about the viability, and so have a lot of independent experts. There is a point at which we may not have functioning satellites up there to give us a good lock. So all of these other countries want to make sure that they have something working too, and that they're not tied to our system. Mm-hmm. So they're launching their own systems based on modern technology. And Galileo. Yeah, okay, someone in the audience just mentioned it. It's Galileo. Yeah, and these are all supposed to be better, newer technologies because our system was built in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And we're running on backup systems on these satellites right now for the most part. We have a few, I think three new ones that have been launched in the last decade.
Not very many, though.
Yeah, I'm going off memory there, and I could be totally wrong. I know that they have more in construction and more planned to launch. But, that's a serious problem for us geocachers if that goes offline.
Mm-hmm.
And it will take new chipsets, new hardware to do it. So our current GPSs, should our current GPS technology fail, aren't going to be finding any satellites.
Mm-mm. And that'd be tough because we won't be able to find any caches.
Absolutely. Which makes it... You have a bunch of problems right now with a tree cover. Imagine when you start losing satellites.
Again, anyone else before we close here? We do record a live podcast every Tuesday night at 9:30 p.m. You can find that at geocachingpodcast.com/live if you want to join us. It's a lot of fun. It's chat room based oriented, and you can chat and call in, and it's a lot of fun. So
yeah, except next Tuesday we're not doing it because we're here today.
Yeah, and you can find this audio and all of our rest of our audio episodes. This is episode 141, so we've got 140 other episodes that you can listen to. So. Thank you guys for joining us here today. We had a lot of fun. This is our second time we've actually done it in front of a live audience. Normally, it's weird looking out and seeing people in the audience, because normally I look out and see a computer screen when sitting at home in my studio. So it's weird looking out and actually seeing people.
And normally we don't even get to see each other. So no. This is like, who's this weird guy over here?
Because I live in Indiana. He lives here in Detroit. So
yeah, this is the only time we see each other is when we get to do an event like this. And it really is a blast. We really appreciate all of you guys coming out and just hanging with us and, your contributions. It's been a lot of fun. And, be sure to join us, too, Tuesday nights if you can. And if not, just download the audio.
Sure. So have a safe week and happy caching, guys.